Now, there are other media, too, whose basic social role is quite different. It's diversion.
There's the real mass media, the kinds that are aimed at, you know, the guys who Joe Sixpack, that kind. The purpose of those media is just to dull people's brains.
This is an oversimplification, but for the 80% or whatever they are, the main thing for them is to divert them, to get them to watch National Football League and to worry about, you know, mother with child with six heads or whatever you pick up in the, you know, in the thing that you pick up on the supermarket stands and so on. Or, you know, look at astrology or get involved in, you know, fundamentalist stuff or something. Or just get them away, you know. Get them away from things that matter. And for that, it's important to reduce their capacity to think.
The sports section is handled in another special department. The sports reporter must be a specialist in his knowledge of sports. He gets his story right at the sporting event and often sends it into his paper play by play.
Take, say, sports. That's another crucial example of the indoctrination system, in my view. For one thing, because it, you know, it offers people something to pay attention to that's of no importance, that keeps them from worrying about, you know, keeps them from worrying about things that matter to their lives that they might have some idea about doing something about. And in fact, it's striking to see the intelligence that's used by ordinary people in sports. I mean, you listen to radio stations where people call in. They have the most exotic information and understanding about, you know, all kind of arcane issues. And the press undoubtedly does a lot with this. I remember in high school already, I was pretty old, I suddenly asked myself at one point, why do I care if my high school team wins the football game? I mean, I don't know anybody on the team, you know. I mean, they have nothing to do with me. I mean, why am I cheering for my team? It doesn't mean it make any sense, you know. But the point is, it does make sense. It's a way of building up irrational attitudes of submission to authority and, you know, group cohesion behind, you know, leadership elements. In fact, it's training in irrational jingoism. That's also a feature of competitive sports. I think if you look closely at these things, I think they have, typically, they do have functions. And that's why energy is devoted to supporting them and creating a basis for them, and advertisers are willing to pay for them and so on.
Yes, I would agree with Professor Chomsky. Sports are at their root about group cohesion and, more to the point, tribalism. Eric Simons, in his book, The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, calls sports fandom a species-level design flaw. When looking at professional sports ball, what you have is grown men being paid millions of pounds, dollars, euros, to run up and down a field trying to kick a ball into a net to the howls, squeals, and grunts of other grown men who, hand in hand with their sons, wear their team's jersey with the name of another man on his back. If you actually open your eyes not only to current trends but to human civilizations stretching back thousands of years, it is absolutely not strange how the rise of sports and sports ball in particular, as well as its central importance for many in the modern world, correlates strongly with an increase in public apathy. More to the point, sports ball is masterfully exploited not only to manipulate the average man, but more importantly, to channel his natural instincts. The reasons might or might not surprise you. So, what is the connection between sports, fandom, and the immersion with group and tribe that we are now witnessing as the World Cup 2026 is now underway? And how does it play out with regards to the good professor's observations? And while sports may channel our primal instincts, it is science that has found a way to recharge the very biology behind them. Watch Tony Robbins talk about the hidden performance tests on our military.
But check this out. Your sirtuins do two things. First, they turn on and off genes. Well, they also have a competing component, because they can only do so much, which is cleaning up your DNA. These sirtuins have a fuel that you've probably heard of called NAD. So NAD is wonderful. But NAD is a size molecule that, as you probably know, needs a precursor called NMN to actually get into the body. For 2 years, top secret, they have been working with our military, with our special forces. And about a month and a half ago in Boston, the commander got so excited, he slipped the beans. And it was just in the Daily Mail last week as well. Sick. He didn't tell all of it. And I know more because I'm invested in the company. And I can't tell you the exact things, but I can tell you what's been reported. What's been reported is the commander said, these are the strongest humans alive, both men and women in the Special Forces, the most fit people, right? Endurance has exploded, he said, very much like the mice. He said, secondly, muscle development is completely changed from the same stimulus, like the same workout, they're getting more muscle. And then thirdly, the most important thing for them is cognition has gone through the roof, because when you're exhausted and you're out there in Special Forces, the ability to use your head is the most more valuable than your body.
David Sinclair's team tested NMN on mice, and in just 14 days, the older ones were running 200 to 300% farther than even the youngest. Human studies, including those military programs, showed similar boosts in performance and resilience. Tony Robbins isn't hyping it. MNN restores mitochondrial functioning, helping your cells produce energy efficiently again. And that's because NAD levels drop by half by age 40, quietly draining your energy, recovery, and vitality, that silent decline we call normal aging. But you can't just take NAD directly. Your body needs the precursor, NMN, to convert it naturally. Listen to what Gary Brecka, a human biologist with over two decades of experience, has to say.
You know, NAD, it's actually not NAD, it's NAD plus, and that little positive is the reduced form of NAD, which means that that charge can't really pass through first pass metabolism. You can't just drop NAD into the stomach. It will just immediately dissociate.
I myself have been using Black Forest's NMN for years now, and it is, I should say, GMO-free and made in the USA. Now, this stuff sells out fast, but right now they're having an incredible offer. Buy one, get one free for 48 hours only. That's correct. Buy one, get one free. Now grab it before it's gone. Link is in the description. And don't let aging get the better of you. The Japanese are nothing if not tribal. One only has to attend a Japanese baseball game to see the fanaticism of Japanese cheering squads complete with flags, an orchestra, and a conductor. The tribalism of modern sports is a phenomenon that can be witnessed everywhere they are played. According to author David Roepick, sports satisfy a basic human need, and rooting for our teams is tied to nothing less than our very drive to survive. People use the pronouns we and they when referring to the team they support. We, the fans of Team A, we crushed, we obliterated, we dominated, we smashed and ground them into dust, that being Team B and their fans, and revel in our win. Look at any write-up in any sports section of any news site and peruse, if you will, the violent adjectives used to report on sports, even in games that are divorced from violence and masculinity, as soccer is most surely an example of. And these adjectives are still regularly deployed. Sportsball is an addiction for many as it feeds into a deep-seated, primitive, and ancient instinctual imperative, and that imperative is survival. We are social animals, and for 99% of our time on this planet as a species, we have depended on our tribe for our existence. If our tribe is doing well militarily, economically, or even culturally, our chances of survival improve. Conversely, if our tribe's fortunes are not doing so well, the opposite is the case. Pakistan versus India, Sunni versus Shia, political left versus right, Manchester United versus Liverpool. All of these represent our fundamental need as a social animal for tribal affiliation and cohesion of that tribe in the face of a hostile world. When considering modern team sportsball, it provides the spectator as a way to participate in tribal conflict and rivalry that is less violent than actual armed conflict. At games, players and fans alike adorn themselves in the uniforms of their tribe. The players themselves vicariously take the form of the warriors on the battleground, and that battleground being, of course, the field. The symbols used, flags flown, and painted faces of the fans all mirror the accoutrements of war. The tribal team colors, team chanting, or team songs are all there to encourage your team to defend their territory, be it on the home field or, in the case of the current World Cup, their side of it. Soccer, of course, is an interesting one as it is so divorced from masculinity. And watching the inevitable dives rolling around in faux pain and players dry humping each other after goals are scored is the obvious foregone conclusion when watching a football match. But now, like every other form of entertainment, sports has become a vector for political action and manipulation. Every sport, even the NHL. The World Cup, however, is the largest sporting event on the planet and the biggest showcase for the political narratives that have been in place in Western societies in particular. In the modern West, naked acts of violence are strictly controlled, and sports ball, whether American football in the US, rugby in Australia, or soccer in the UK, they are all an approved surrogate for people to throw their instinctual tribal energy of the us versus them behind. In what Europeans call the beautiful game and what Americans call poverty ball, the tribalism in soccer can become so unhinged that it regularly leads to violence. And in many countries, including the UK, they maintain lists of football hooligans and hooligan groups that are regularly shared between authorities of various countries to help curtail violence at stadiums and on the streets. To understand soccer hooliganism is to understand that, in terms of the human animal, it has always been the men of the tribes who have been tasked with undertaking violence on behalf of the group since time immemorial. Thus, it is no wonder that the vast, vast, vast majority of fans, especially those who can become violent and even riot depending on the outcome of a game, well, they are men. What should be stated and what is obviously clear is that this is not a reflection or result of the modern era of channeling this kind of tribalism. It's not new and has been noted going back thousands of years to the dawn of spectator sports. The Romans understood this, and whether it was chariot racing in their time or football games in our own, there is a reason why governments fund stadium building and subsidize sports ball teams. The Romans had their bread and circuses then, just as we do today, and the purposes are the same: to distract and to preoccupy those invested in the games. This is a very beneficial package for the elite, who would rather have their proles absorbed with Team Red versus Team Blue rather than the machinations of a corrupt political class owned by international finance and the real effects these entities have on their lives. They very much want to avoid another episode of the Occupy movement that they have so thoroughly co-opted with faux corporate concern for human rights issues that perversely brought on the culture war instead. Thus, sports ball is a kind of containment buffer, a containment machine, if you will, that is used quite maniacally by authorities who encourage vast swaths of the population to live day to day using their base emotions as a worldly guide. It is for this reason that the World Cup matters so much to so many, as well as the average man, because it affects them emotionally in a way that abstract geopolitical, financial, and corporate malfeasance never will. This is why events like the World Cup and soccer in particular are so useful and exploited as vectors of political narrative building. Now, in what can only be called synchronicity, it was back in the autumn of 2017, almost 10 years ago, when tens of thousands of FC Cologne fans brought chaos to the streets of London. That was when the words of Professor Chomsky really solidified for me that professional sports keeps people from worrying about things that matter to their lives and obfuscates things that they might otherwise have some idea about doing something about. Now, a very long story made short, thousands of fans of the Cologne Football Club brought chaos to the streets of London in 2017. The reason being, the game between the German club and local Arsenal was delayed by an hour due to severe congestion surrounding the stadium as a result of too many Cologne fans having tickets in what was designated Arsenal seating. The congestion was made worse as stewards caused blockages at gates, trying to keep violence to a minimum and attempting to identify German from English fans to keep them in their designated sections. What struck me was the image of tens of thousands of German men, presumably mostly from the city of Cologne, marching through the streets of London and causing what was then described as unprecedented violence. Because of this, the game was only allowed to be played because the London Metropolitan Police decided that it was in the best and safest interests and the best option, given the difficulty of dispersing tens of thousands of German fans and the likely trouble that this would cause. Now, this naked display of tribalism by the men of Cologne was being enacted on the streets of the capital of a foreign country, and all for the purposes of a soccer game. Cologne, many of you might know or remember, well, it has become infamous around the world as the epicenter of the mass enrichment that took place around Germany during the New Year's celebrations of 2016, about a year earlier. While initially the stories were suppressed by the media, there were similar incidences of defiling enrichment at public celebrations in Hamburg, Dortmund, Dusseldorf, Stuttgart, and other cities. However, it was in Cologne that the largest number of reported cases of misunderstood intercultural communication and defilement took place. Now, what was the answer given by the men of Cologne to this egregious affront and tribal aggression toward German women, their women, in a city by men who had just arrived in their hundreds of thousands and had been welcomed with open arms, in some cases only weeks before? Men who, in their thousands, tore up the streets of London only a year and a half later because they couldn't see their team take the field on time. What was their response, these men from Cologne? Nothing. Complete silence. For many, it was a refusal to even acknowledge that the events outside the city's cathedral even took place. And again, I hear the words of Professor Chomsky echoing in my mind that sports ball helps get those people out of the way. It helps motivate all of their instinctual energy behind things like soccer and other exotic information associated with the game that does not matter in any real way to their lives. It channels their thoughts away from worrying about things that matter to their lives, things that they might have some idea about doing something about. And while presumably not being influenced by sports ball itself, the women of Cologne, for their part, apologized for xenophobia and handed out flowers on the streets to the migrants living in Cologne following that mass enrichment of defilement. Either way, as the World Cup 2026 continues, no matter the stance one takes on sports ball and the level of fanaticism you have or do not have, you should understand the tribal instincts that are being evoked by the game. You should also not be allowing it to distract you from things that really matter in your life, nor should sports ball let you lose focus on things you can do something about, as it would seem the men of Cologne had let it. Now, enjoy the game by all means, but don't be like the men of Cologne. So what do you think? Leave me your thoughts in the comment section below. I'd be very interested in hearing what you have to say. Also, if you'd like to help the channel, ways of doing so are in the description. It'd be very much appreciated. If you like the video, please leave it a thumbs up on your way out. And also remember to check out Black Forest Supplements and their amazing NMN. I've been taking it for several years now and can only rave about it. You can find that link in the pinned comment and in the description. Until then, until the next video, I'll see you for now. Bye.